Hi, this is Jenny White, the host of the Business Growth Podcast, where we talk to entrepreneurs, business owners, and high-level executives to learn best practices, how to grow your business from a variety of different industries and verticals. Anyone and everyone can get knowledge from this show, and we're excited to have you here. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is Jenny White with the Business Growth Show, and I am so excited here today. We have with us Frank Carbajal. He is a three-time published author, and he's also the founder of the Silicon Valley Latino Leadership Summit at STMPO LLC. Frank, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm excited to have a conversation with I feel like a longtime listener, first-time caller with you. I've been a fan of yours on LinkedIn for a long time, so I'm excited to get in and get to know more about you and what you do and how you make such a big impact on so many people. So thanks for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you. And good morning and good afternoon to folks on the East Coast. And I'm honored to be on your show and take any of your questions with excitement and inspired to be here.
Awesome. Amazing. Thank you so much. Frank, you have been, so you've done a lot. You have made a huge impact. You do a lot with giving back to your community, empowering people. You have a huge following on LinkedIn. I think I saw you have over 35,000 followers on LinkedIn. That's no easy feat. Certainly an influencer in your own right within the LinkedIn community for sure. And beyond that, I'd love for you to share a little bit about your story and what you're doing now. And by the way, congratulations. I know your wife just entered retirement. So I just want to know sort of like, what are the plans for Frank moving forward? And so, yeah, please take it away.
Well, thank you. Yeah. So with LinkedIn, I would like to mention, you know, how it's a platform that really has been supportive of an event that became a leadership summit. And the leadership summit stems back from a little bit about myself, a book that was published by Wiley in 2008. And you mentioned my wife, Molly, is very instrumental in the fact that I was able to pursue creating the Silicon Valley Latino Leadership Summit based off of the first book, Building the Latino Future. And so the book itself, as many know, in 2009, when there was a market crash, sure. You know, my book, the book sales had slowed down. And, you know, many of the books at Amazon were going through Amazon, and Amazon had acquired, like the Border Books and a lot of Barnes and Noble mm-hmm. were closing. And so I had to pivot. And I spoke to an executive mentor of mine who's in the first book. His name's Mr. Dick Gonzalez. And I asked him his thoughts. And as a good mentor and sponsor would say is, you know, think about bringing together these thought leaders in the same room, but more importantly, invite guests to get excited and engaged to purchase your book in person. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so the first leadership summit started in 2010 on Sand Hill Road. Sand Hill Road is known as the venture capital mecca of the world. Mm-hmm. And it was at this place known as the Quandris Conference Center. It's, you know, it was kind of beta, you know, like entrepreneurs beta testing and to see how things would work out. It sold out, and and a person in the room by the name of Michael Lopez, who's a graduate from Stanford University, he approached me and he says, hey, this room is a little smaller than the faculty club at Stanford University. Think of having it there. So he became a person to sponsor 2011. And from 2011 to 2019, this leadership summit happened every year in May. Mm-hmm. However, with the pandemic, COVID hitting in March, we had to pause the leadership summit for the safety of not only the Latino community, but inclusive everyone in the U.S. to slow things down, to really wait. And so the leadership summit postponed until 2022. And in 2022, last year, the 12th Annual Leadership Summit happened at the Computer History Museum. And the Computer History Museum is based in Mountain View near the Google World Headquarters. So one thing that that I have to share about myself is that, you know, I come from humble beginnings. I was born in a town known as El Centro, which is about 35 miles north of the border of Mexico. And so I was born here in the U.S., but what really inspires me as a person is, and the humility, is how my parents worked as migrant farm workers. And they moved up to the Santa Clara Valley, now known as the Silicon Valley. But Jen, when I see the disparities and the divisiveness in terms of access to capital and access to equity, I feel compelled and, you know, socially responsible for identifying leaders, not only through my book, but through my network, to connect the future Gen Z, as we know.
That's incredible. Thank you. And it's so, for me, wonderful timing. Saturday night, I went to a book signing from a woman down here in Los Angeles. She was born in Michoacan. She moved here when she was, I believe, 18, did not speak the language, moved here with her mother and father. And she just released her first book, Brava. And it's it was an incredible book signing event where she brought in a panel of Latina, a small leadership panel. One woman was a professor at ASU. They had all gone to UCLA together, and they just shared incredible stories about, you know, Latino voices, Latinx voices, and the fact that less than 9% of books, authors, screenwriters, you know, within the industry, less than 9% of what gets published is from Latino voices. And it really dawned on me, like, I'm so immersed in the culture. You know, I've lived in Los Angeles for over 20 years, and so many of my friends and who've now become my family, and it's just such a part of my life that it didn't dawn on me, like, wow, like, you did not have the representation when you were growing up. You didn't have even just the exposure within media and society at large of your culture in a proportionate way. And so I just think it's so important to continue to promote diversity of voices, of authors, of sharing stories, and from a leadership standpoint and inclusivity standpoint as well. I would love to attend the next one for sure. And, you know, thank you for sharing that. It definitely, everybody comes with a story. So many families have sacrificed so much, and it's incredible the leaps and bounds that so many generations have made in such a short amount of time. But to your point, the access to capital and the disparities that still exist, it is still very where you're at, the Silicon Valley, the juxtaposition of what you're describing, right? Which is, your family came as migrant workers to Silicon Valley, which was Santa Clara Valley, right? Now it is the Mecca, the epicenter of technology, innovation, entrepreneurship. And it is a predominantly white male dominated industry still. How do you feel that the next, let's say, 10 years are going to be impacted by Latinos in Latinx within the Silicon Valley tech community?
First of all, thank you for sharing a little bit of your background of Los Angeles. You know, I every summer would visit my cousins in South Central Los Angeles and the Compton area. And I don't know if people have seen my videos, but I, you know, like to pop and lock. So a lot of the times I felt that was something that was important to me to keep me out of, you know, gangs and things that kept me focused in terms of competition. So great question. I feel that what's most important is the infrastructure of education. And in terms of education, I feel that within the next 10, 15 years, what we have to see, Jen, is I know that I'm involved in, it's called the East Side Eastside Alliance, which is based in East San Jose, but it's through the Silicon Valley Education Foundation. And this foundation is focused on STEM-related programs and programming to make sure that the kids that are in the Eastside School District, and not only the Eastside School District, but throughout the Bay Area, kids of color are being not only challenged, but given the resource to be part of STEM programs.
Yeah.
But I think more importantly, it's important to incorporate pre-K STEM, you know, like universal pre-K in the Silicon Valley, especially because what I see as far as technology is Latino, Latinx representation in these tech companies is at about 4%. And in terms of C-suite level executives or the founders, it's less than 1%. And to increase the double digits, we really have to focus on double digits in educational attainment with college degrees that have to do with STEM related, you know, degrees, so that that could transition into these jobs. And then that will help the trajectory within the professional level of an individual. But, you know, Jen, it really starts with not only the infrastructure of education, but more than just mentoring. Mentoring is great, but what really moves the needle is executive sponsorship. An executive that really could look at these school districts and provide funding and provide the sponsorship to these programs that have to do with STEM, but start much earlier. And why I say pre-K, from K to the third grade, is because, as I shared with you personally, my migrant story is the migrant story of thousands and hundreds of thousands of families in the Silicon Valley, Santa Clara Valley, that you had mentioned your friend from Michoacan. There's a big Michoacan migrant community in East San Jose, but many of the families worked, like my parents worked in the fields, or worked in canneries before, you know, they were outsourced and became, you know, tech hubs. So I think it's important to create tech hubs for Latinx and Black communities throughout the Bay Area.
Sure. Agreed.
To see change, to see change in the next 15 years, to see the single digits going to the double digits in terms of representation in these technology companies.
Yeah. You know, there was a company that I followed. Are you familiar with Bitwise? The rise and fall
yes,
of Bitwise?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And I just thought, I am so bummed out about how that whole thing transpired, but the concept and the impetus behind it, I thought was brilliant, to create tech hubs like what you're speaking of in the areas. So geographically, demographically, and with leadership, like you said, executive leader. I mean, that I believe in that holistic approach and combining resources. I think that if we get our minds out of a siloed, conceptually remove ourselves from silo of education, silo of home life, silo of work, silo of, there's no silos. We are multifaceted beings. We think and feel throughout the day, no matter where we are, what we're doing and what we're exposed to. We need to have multifaceted, holistic approach to education, on the job training, work experience, exposure to, like you said, STEM. And I think it's absolutely brilliant. STEM starting in pre-K, because as we know, kids that go through pre-K have a much higher propensity to higher education, faster, you know, the learning and the assimilation, you know, sociologically is superior to, and you're talking to a kid. It was a funny joke a long time ago. I actually didn't go to pre-K. I was like, that's what's wrong with me. No, but I mean,
Neither did I.
Yeah, I know, right? We're missing out. But we did okay. We did okay. But it is brilliant to take it from its root all the way to maturation. And I think that the more pieces that we put together, there's some studies I'm going to send you also after this from a guy named Anker with what's the name of this company? He did a similar approach in Louisville, Kentucky. And what he did was he put together anchor businesses, so some anchor clients, worked with the mayor and the governor, and then he basically went in and said, hey, we've got all these displaced coal miners, and we've got these inner city, you know, we've got rural and we've got inner city. And he combined both out of work rural and inner city folks and trained them up with General Assembly through a technology apprenticeship program, gave them on the job training with the QA, you know, assortment of QA jobs, and had the work orders basically from the employer partners, had the support from the government, local city and county and state government, and then combined in different nonprofits to provide housing, transportation, childcare, et cetera, so that these folks could all, and it, I mean, didn't matter if they were rural coal miners, didn't matter if they were inner city, you know, at-risk youth or formerly incarcerated, rising tide, you know, raises all boats, right? So I thought that was a very interesting case study, and I would love to see that done more in more areas where more people have access to that type of education and training.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's access and it's training, and it's also you know, a matter of you know, the mentorship that transitions into the executive sponsorship and belief in the person to really guide them through a process. It really is the process. But no, thank you. And you know, I feel that your question within the next 15 years, it really is achievable. But one of the things that you'd mentioned that's very key is the silos. And the silos is also seen in the Latino community, that there's so many, and I'm sure you could see on LinkedIn, you see so many different events happening within the Latino community, mm-hmm. whether it's in Florida, New York, California, Chicago. And you think, well, how's the unity? And the unity is something that is key in terms of really lifting one another to achieve these goals, as far as, you know, venture capital or technology, mm-hmm. or any type of leadership within organizations. And so silos is something that is detrimental in a way, because we need to really look at how we could create an ecosystem yeah. that brings us all together, yeah. and leave behind, you know, someone's political thinking, leave behind someone's thinking of, you know, politics that really could be a hindrance. And let's think about, as I'd mentioned, the educational attainment for all communities, like your friend that you went to see last weekend, the author that is from Michoacan. Many of the stories that we all share at the end of the conversation, the common thread of the conversation should really be to achieve goals together. And so I am excited that you asked the question, because it really is about, you know, reaching those goals within the next 10, 15 years together, unifying.
Definitely. We all know, look, the train is a going. We all just got to jump on, and we got to take care of each other. You know, the technology, the rapid rate of evolution, innovation, it's mind-boggling, but it is an enormous opportunity. And I commend you on everything you've done and continue to do, and I hope I can somehow support and be a part of it. There's definitely, you know, and I like what you said too about interlinking disparate communities, right? From California to Florida, to even the difference between Los Angeles and Bakersfield, you know, Los Angeles and San Jose and San Francisco, right? There's these micro ecosystems, but I'd love to maybe come up with a way to cross-pollinate and link up those, you know, cities, counties, tech hubs as well. There's so much learning that we can all share from one another. And just like I said, from these case studies and examples I'm going to send you from Interapt is the name of the other company. Another one is Dev Pipeline. I actually was a part of that, which is a full stack web development apprenticeship program, Department of Labor approved, with through Dev Pipeline. Actually, I was a part of that organization for several years during its launch, to help make, like you said, to make STEM and make tech careers possible for folks that may not even think they have an opportunity or have the talent or capacity to have a career in technology. Just shifting that mindset and saying to folks, hey, whether or not you even have a GED, you can go through this program. We will help you in a 45-week apprenticeship on the job training approved program. We will help you attain that career that has upward mobility, no glass ceiling, constant capacity for growth, you know, come what may through AI. I'm not scared of AI. I don't think AI is going to replace a bunch of developers and coders. We're always going to need people in tech, you know?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, and the thing about evolution is that you hit it on the head, where we have to really look at, and I, as you know, Jenny, I challenge folks when it comes to posts on LinkedIn and what they may write. And I feel that it's really social responsibility and accountability to ask questions. And a fellow Latina wrote about AI. And I said, you know, this is great. AI is great. But as a Latino community, we need to achieve, you know, the educational attainment first before, you know, jumping into something that that many of us, you and I, really understand AI, but we have to really, you know, look at the big picture. Is you have to be sensitive to folks that may not be ready for AI yet, and understand, right, that the evolution is a slower process to where we have to have that empathy. Like, for example, my nieces and nephews, I'm really empathetic to the fact that jobs in terms of machine learning and AI, that's a different conversation. You know, a lot of folks in the Latino community may be losing jobs to AI. So we have to be empathetic as well. And sure. So in terms of training, mm-hmm. you had mentioned that the key training mm-hmm. is we have to really look at programs that could help train the future in AI.
Agreed. And you just actually reminded me of something. Ironically, without any action on my part whatsoever, I was approached within the last month for three apprentices that want to work at my marketing agency. One is a foreign exchange student coming from Spain. He's arriving in March, and he's going to be working with my agency for about 4 months. Another one is a Mexican-American young lady who's based in Los Angeles, who's actually working on her PhD, and she's in marketing, and she's never worked with a marketing agency, so she's going to be working with me. And the third one is another apprentice from Colombia. And all three found my marketing agency and approached me and asked me if I would help them. And I was like, absolutely. I said, what do you want to do? What do you know? What are your strengths? Reviewed their resume, interviewed them, all of that, right? After doing all of that, they said, well, what's the one thing I can really do that's going to give me an edge? And I said, in my humble opinion, if you can learn AI prompts and AI engineering, and there are courses all over the place, I sent them, gosh, probably like 6-7 different links for AI prompt, you know, that's how we incorporate AI into our agency, right? And we've been using it since November of last year. I said, if you can focus and understand the digital landscape in terms of marketing, but more so, get yourself trained up, and I'll help you and tune you up on how to functionally utilize that within a, you know, the career space. I think that's going to be the best. if I had the time to do it myself right now, which I'm probably going to end up doing it, but I said that is probably the one area that is going to just make you a sniper when it comes to understanding the evolution of how this economy, this industry, many more industries are going to be impacted. And I think it's in your best interest to get started now. And I think it's interesting that all of them are so educated, so trained, so, again, back to the education, right? but yet not anywhere on their radar.
That's no, that's great. That's great. And they'll be lucky and fortunate to have that opportunity with you. So, you know,
oh, I'm excited. I think yeah. I should have just been a teacher. Honestly, I, whenever I'm around kids or getting to like get in and train people and work with them, I just realize, oh my gosh, this is where like my soul starts becoming, it feels effervescent, you know, compared to in the slog of working. And not that I don't enjoy what I do. I feel back to your point. I feel so much about what I do as a marketing agency, and not to make it, you know, I'm not trying to make myself sound more important than I am, but I do feel that I provide a public service. I help businesses.
You do.
Stay
of course. Yeah.
Busy.
Yeah.
I help them employ staff. I help those. It's important that what I do and what I deliver, it is outcome based, and it is to perpetuate their business is symbiotic for me to perpetuate mine. So by doing that, I'm able to employ the people that I have. I'm able to leverage relationships and help them build. And nothing makes me happier than seeing a client that begins to employ, you know, goes from 70 employees to 90 to 95 to 100 because our marketing is working and they want to grow. Fabulous. That makes me happy.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. So Frank, thank you so much for your time today. Everybody, please go check out Frank Carvajal. He's on LinkedIn. I'm going to include the link in the description of this podcast. Please check out his books on Amazon. Why don't you go ahead and tell us how they can find your books? They're incredible. But yeah, go ahead and tell us. I think they're both on Amazon. And there's
yes,
three,
thank
actually.
You. Yeah. Yeah, there's three. And on Amazon, you just type in the first book is Building the Latino Future. In fact, this is my first book.
There you go. Fabulous.
And
success stories for the next
Ken
generation.
Ken Blanchard wrote the foreword.
Nice.
Building the Latino Future, success stories for the next generation. I always feel the next generation, the future generation, is what will be, as you had mentioned, Jenny, the most innovative, the most captivating, the most brilliant. The second book. Yeah, the second book is in Spanish. It's El Futuro, E-L Futuro, F-U-T-U-R-O, Latino. El Futuro Latino is Grupo Norma, a publisher out of Colombia, out of Bogota. And then the third book was published at the height of COVID. It's titled Latinx Business Success. That's also a book by Wiley. And I appreciate the time today, and everyone, please, as Jenny had mentioned, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn, and I promise I write back, as Jenny knows, right?
He sure does. He sure does. You've just been such an inspiration and a positive force for change. I always look at your posts. I always read what you're doing, and it's true. Yeah. We've never met before, or maybe we have a long time ago. We're not sure, but yeah, you've always been very, very gracious and communicative on LinkedIn. So I highly encourage anybody that wants to reach out to Frank, please don't hesitate to do so. Frank, thanks so much for your time today. I hope you get to do it again. Hope to see you in person at the next event.
Definitely. Thank you all.